This is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. Mark Van Aken with first edition news in a minute. But first up, a favourite of Box to Box, Wanderers stopper Andrew Redmayne is going to give us a look at the Rossonero and their 50-50 start to the season. But what a brilliant round of the A-League last week with nothing bigger than Tim Cahill's wonder goal in the Melbourne derby that was heard around the football world. We'll talk through all of that and preview the round ahead with Dean Hennessy, as well as Sydney's win over a gutsy Canberra in the first FFA Cup semi. And to wrap up the first hour, from the mob that were too good for Olympic this past week, Sydney FC assistant coach Steve Corriker will talk us through their barnstorming start to the season and some insights into this week's win. In the second hour, as always, we'll kick off with second edition news, then chairman of the Northern Fury, Rabia Crayham, on his views about the topic on every football person's lips, expansion of the A-League and, of course, promotion and relegation. And Dean back with all the international news before Marco wraps it up with stoppage time. Edge, never a dull moment, mate.
Well, another big week in football, Rob. No doubt about that. What about that FA Cup semi-final? Bernie Abini back on the score sheet.
Yep, everyone's talking. FA Cup semi-final, of course, unless Bernie's signed a contract that I'm unaware of. But no, it was brilliant from Sydney FC. It just means that they've just continued to tick every box in the return from what was a pretty ordinary season last season. And you don't have to like Sydney FC, but that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
And Timmy Cahill lighting up Etihad Stadium, pardon the pun, lighting it up well and truly at both ends of the supporter stadium. But that was fantastic. Can I tell you that I, during the week, dropped into an event called the Sports Writers Festival where Tim Cahill spoke.
Yeah.
And it was an unbelievable hour and a half with Tim Cahill. It was like one of my colleagues who was with me said, it was just like we were having a beer at the bar.
Yeah.
And he was expansive in all of his thoughts about his career. Really super. Western Sydney Wanderers come back. That was pretty good. I know.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to them. And Pep in no Pep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pep didn't have any pep at all, did he?
Nothing at all, mate. It would have made Jose Mourinho feel a hell of a lot better about his world. Marco, mate, you've got it all for us.
I do. Now, as you touched on, Bernie Abini scored in his first game in nearly 18 months as Sydney FC advanced to the FFA Cup final, killing off Canberra Olympic's dream run with a hard-fought 3-0 win. Semi-professional outfit Olympic made the Sky Blues work every step of the way at Viking Park on Wednesday night, and the bids become the first second-tier club to make the tournament decider. In the end, they're undone by a Sebrile header, a cracking Milos Dimitrijevic free kick, and a Beanie strike. They're only spared a fourth goal, thanks to Alex Brosk's wayward header. Good work, though, by Canberra Olympic. And on top of that, good crowd. 5,500 packed in there to a nice little boutique venue.
Yeah.
Little hint there to the FFA.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's on every level, there was nothing bad about it. All the hype and excitement coming out of Canberra. They were in the spotlight nationally in the football world. They did themselves justice, with a bit of luck.
Stiff not to have a goal, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And so it was just a good story all round. And it's, look, we talked about this many times on the show, as everybody in the football community, that the rise and rise of the FFA Cup is it those roots plug deeper and deeper into the culture of the game, and people around the country are becoming aware of all the clubs outside of their own hometown, and rivalries are building up. It was a great result. Congratulations to Canberra Olympic and everyone concerned with that club,
and of course Sydney FC. Now it's just over a year since the Matildas undertook tense and at times publicly acrimonious CBA negotiations. Professional Footballers Australia have voiced concern over the contract negotiations for the Brisbane Roar women's team. This reported via various agencies this week, including our friends at thewomensgame.com. The PFA is working very closely with the players and Greg O'Rourke, of course, the head of the A-League, to ensure the impasse is resolved, said a PFA spokesman. Now, what this is all about, Michael and Rob, is Daniel Cobb had come into the Brisbane Roar as the general manager a few months back. He'd made a conscious decision to really put the W League at the forefront, follow Melbourne City's lead, and pay out the $150,000 salary cap. The new management's come in, Mark Kingsman, who's the general manager there now, and they've tried to unwind these contracts. They weren't physical contracts that the girls signed, by understanding. They were basically offers of contract, because they weren't allowed to sign contracts pre-September 1. and now they're basically trying to backtrack. And then a statement came out from the club this week, which was a little bit confusing. I did get it clarified by Shane Stefanuto, the media manager. The Raw said the salary cap investment by the Raw, so actually I'll backtrack. This is after the ABC reported. They're trying to downgrade them by about 40%, and they've already seen Lydia Williams.
Let's be clear on this. I mean, this is someone somewhere needs to get a hold of this because it could get out of hand and turn into a really, really ugly story. Well, I don't care who needs to agree with it, whether it's the FFA or the club themselves. But we're talking about $150,000 in total.
Well,
Mark,
well,
can I
less and more.
I know you're close to this. You've talked to a number of parties in this issue. But last year they were paid a certain amount. Daniel Cobb then promised them a tripling of their salaries, is that right?
Thereabouts. It's our understanding. It was about $50,000 they paid out last year, which ended up being like about $110 a week for some of the players,
And then the new management has decided to wind that back they were paid
last year. They've come out, so Kingsman has said, well, not less. So let me read this statement. So this is from the club. The salary cap investment by the Raw for 2016-17 will increase from $50,000 to $150,000. Which didn't make sense to me. I then clarified that with Shane Stefanoni because they said, well, hang on, if you're winding back the salaries, but you say you're going to pay out the cap of 150, what, were you going to pay over the cap previously? No. So what? I've got to editorialise. It's a really poorly worded statement that's come out from the club. What they're now saying is $150,000 will be the total investment in W League.
So that's their budget.
So they're saying that, look, the girls will still get a bit of a pay bump, but not nearly as much as was promised. And they are alleging that they're going to be putting more money into coaching staff, medical, sports science for the W League team, which you can only take them at their word with that. But
so was it a misleading report to say that the W League players at Brisbane were going to get a pay cut of 40%?
No, I don't think so.
No,
because again, they're talking about some off-field stuff, but it's very confusing. And what's troubling, we did seek comment from the PFA, from John Didalitza. He kindly declined because it made sense because they're still in the middle of this. And the other disturbing thing for mine, being a lefty, Michael, is they're now trying to get the girls to come in one by one. They're basically not allowing them to. Well, again, it's been alleged they're not allowing them to collectively bargain even this new agreement across the board, which is disappointing and frustrating, no doubt, for the PFA. And on PFA news, Schwabby's back as the chairman of the PFA.
Did he ever really leave?
Revolving doors down there at the PFA. Didalitza's back as a CEO and Schwabby's back as chairman. So interesting times. The more they change, the more they stay the same, just down the road from here, in fact.
Which is a shuffling of deck chairs, but let's hope that the Brisbane Raw women's team is not the Titanic, as you steal my line. it's one of those things, two steps forward, one step back for the women's game. And we really should be over it. And for trivial money like this, in the bigger picture, these sorts of things need to be sorted out. I know, the FFA isn't going to want to set a precedent, but we just need to get this sorted and move on. We're in the A-League season already. The W League, it's imminent. Get it fixed.
Well, the thing is, too, ultimately the difference in money here, you say it's 150, but they're already paying 50, then it was up to 150. So in the middle is 100K. If they're now bringing it down by 40%, am I right in saying all this bad air, this bad publicity, is it worth 50 or 60K?
No, it's not, but it just shows you where Brisbane Roar's at as an organisation at the moment. So I think that's something to reflect upon. But look, just a final comment for me on the W League before we move on is that it is growing and developing, I think there is a lot of progression. This is just a couple of steps back on the run, and I think wiser heads will prevail in this issue, won't it, Mark? Mm-hmm. As you said, it's not really worth the trouble what's going to eventuate for an amount of 40 or 50 grand.
That's why Greg O'Rourke's involved now. That's why the PFA's involved. I'll have the last word on this as well. At a time where the AFL is getting its act together with AFL, spending a lot of money, and we're talking about losing players to the AFL, as are other sports like netball, basketball, etc., it's not a fantastic time then for this to be happening.
No, it's not.
We haven't got much more time, so let's just quickly go through. Ange Postecoglou has revealed he did struggle with dropping Lucas Neal when he took over as Socceroos boss back in 2013, and the way it happened still rankles him. Now, he spoke about this in his book, Changing the Game. I wish we had that preview before we spoke to him, because there's a lot of gems in this book that we really didn't know about, so we could have really drilled him when he was on the show a couple of weeks ago. But basically did it over the phone with Lucas, and he didn't take it well. And, of course, he basically hasn't been cited since. So
That's one of the saddest stories in Australian sport, really, Lucas Neal. The whole picture around him, he's you know, his departure from the scene at every level, his financial position. You just hope that the bloke's, you know, living a life that that he's getting some satisfaction out there from, because, you know, whether you loved Lucas Neal or whether you didn't, you know, he put his heart and soul into the green and gold when he played for us, and, you know, he was there at some of our biggest moments, and you just hope that he can be rehabilitated at some point and get back into the game at least at the domestic level.
Well, people say that when Ange gave Lucas that news... Mm. That Lucas told him that he would disappear from the
correct.
Game,
and
he did.
Yeah. Now, well,
which is a bit sad, but you know, some people do like to just drift off into the sunset.
Yeah, but I feel with Lucas, he's just, you know, and that's the saddest thing, because again, he was revered and he was one of the biggest names in Australian sport, let alone football, for a while there, and he just, he just tried to hold on to that Socceroos jersey too long, and he had that blow up with the fans at the SFS as well.
Yeah. But he's, holding on to this, I mean, the desire to play for your country, even when you're 38, yeah, you and I as punters in the grandstand think that's a bit strange, but you can understand a guy holding up to that dream.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be a prick here and say, yeah, I can understand it in the context he didn't have a club for nearly 2 years, and do you play for free for the Socceroos? Well, go to the World Cup, you get paid for that?
The Socceroos are one of the best remunerated groups
correct.
Of players.
Correct, so
in the world.
I don't think it was all about the shirt,
Brazil.
In my humble opinion. Anyway,
yeah, well, look, he's not the first bloke.
Get me up on Twitter if you disagree, Lucas.
He's not the first bloke that played, or woman that played sport for the filthy Lucas. So it's a fair point, and if he wanted to cash in towards the end of his career, I don't blame him for trying to hang on. He told he wasn't going to be hanging on. You just wish that they could have done it in a more amicable fashion or sorted out their differences afterwards. All right, Marco, that's fantastic, mate. I know we've got a lot more talking football news after the second edition news at the top of the second hour at stoppage time. We always go through some of your little gems, so you're holding a few little bits and pieces back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. After the break, though, we've got Andrew Redmayne. He's a good friend of Box to Box. He's been on the show several times before. The stopper from the Western Sydney Wanderers, all coming up next.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. Now, the juggernaut of football in Australia over recent years has been the Western Sydney Wanderers, but they just have not been able to manage to grab that one prize that they're after at the end of the season. The heartbreak of last year burns deep, and to talk about that and the season which has just begun, the stopper, Andrew Redmayne, welcome back to the show, mate.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not at all, Andrew. So so coming into this season, there was a wholesale changes under Popper, you know, after it was a successful year last year, but without the prize that you wanted. You had a really rough start to the year, just got your proverbial pants pulled down in week one, but to pull the whole thing back together and go away to Hindmarsh and beat the champions was a sign of hopefully things to come for your mob.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's something that reflects quite a bit in Wanderers history, is there's a large turnover of players, but the coaching staff here is fantastic, and they recruit so well, and you know, everyone's fitted in so well and really and bonded as a team, I guess. And week one wasn't good, but you know, we know the journey we're on, and it's a long road. I mean, 27 rounds, it's a long time, and we just knew that we had to stick to our guns, and the result showed in Adelaide. But having said that, it's still a long, long way away, and we just want to kind of right the wrongs of last year, and it was good to get one over Adelaide.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, tell us just how did Popper and the club handle that loss? You know, going into a derby with such expectation, it was a massive crowd. It was a huge story on all the sports pages around the country, the fact that it happened, it was an embarrassing result. Let's not beat around the bush. How did he handle it? What did he say after the game? And clearly, whatever it was, worked, because you got the result on the weekend just gone.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it was pretty embarrassing. It always is, copping four, but even more so against your bitter rivals. So it's a bitter pill to take. But we just had to cop it on the chin and take it for what it is. But having said that, I didn't think we played too badly. I mean, we played four moments of the game poorly, and we got punished for it. So,
but what did Popper say? What did he say to the boys afterwards? I mean, that's I guess what we're looking for, mate. Was there something specific you can recall in the rooms afterwards at training during the week?
Yeah, we just got to stick to our guns. I mean, we know the journey we're on. We know the style of football we want to play, and we know how to execute it. It's just we've got to maintain that for a whole 95 minutes throughout the match.
Now, your game, the Sydney Derby in round one and then the Melbourne Derby in round two, took a lot of the oxygen and the media discussion. But I thought the match against Adelaide was a match of high quality and high standard. And I thought it was a really good win coming from behind. But I want you to reflect on two things. What about that super sub? He gets the job done for you more often than not. Is there any chance of him starting soon, Brendan Tandalap?
I think that's between Popper and himself, but he's phenomenal. He's been his record's just so impressive coming off the bench.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. So why would you change a winning formula? I guess I mean he's amazing.
And this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Western Sydney Wanderers goalkeeper Andrew Redmayne, and it's a massive weekend coming up as well, mate. I mean, seriously, the games, as you say, it's a long, long season. But you know, you're at home to Newcastle at Spotless, and this will be, you know, the first big test at the new venue after, you know, the derby, to see, you know, will the red and black bloc travel up the Parramatta Road to you know, to come in their numbers. And no doubt you're expecting them to turn up and create that same atmosphere that they've done at Pirtek over the first few years of the club's existence.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a new home, so to speak, for the next couple of years. And, you know, I wholeheartedly believe that we've got the best fans in the country over any code. And I'm sure they'll travel in numbers to support us.
Andrew, I think you've got a real superstar in Jumpai Kasukami. I think actually his first two games have been really special. Is there a lot of confidence within the group building in him, and how's he going? You know, I think he's been here about 8 or 9 weeks now, but how's he going with his English, and what type of person is he?
He's very much Japanese. He's very respectful. He's very quiet off the pitch, but on the pitch, he's an absolute live wire. Like you said, he's a surprise packet. And I think the more he gets used to the Australian conditions and the way that football gets played in Australia, he'll just continue to grow and really thrive in the A-League. I think the first two rounds he was. Like I said, really electric, and he's just going to be really tough to handle for defenders.
And with Nicolai Topor-Stanley leaving the club, you know, that does leave a pretty big hole in your defence. You know, with a guy like Andrew Nabu lighting it up for Newcastle last week, how's the structure expected to set up this weekend?
Yeah, I think we'll set up the same as any other week. I mean, we work so hard in pre-season on not just 11 players, but the whole squad knowing their roles and knowing where to fit in. And whoever has to step into, not just in defence, but in any role, I've got the utmost confidence in anyone that steps in from our squad.
Now, it's an interesting game, Newcastle. They've actually, despite the shock of losing their coach a month out from the start of the season, in really some odd circumstances, despite that shock, their pre-season's been pretty good, and they've actually signed players that must demand a little bit of respect, and their early season form suggests that they're going to be on
third
the pace.
On the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this is actually quite a big game. You must be looking forward to the Newcastle challenge. And have you sensed that Newcastle have improved?
Yeah, absolutely. We gave them a run in a friendly in pre-season, and I think that was just after the new coach got appointed, and I think it's almost kind of really solidified them and gelled them as a team, and there's a really strong resolve amongst the playing group there. Like you said, they've also made some great signings, and they're going to be very hard to break down and beat as a team, which they showed on the weekend. I mean, 4-0 against Brisbane is is a great result for anyone. So it's going to be a tough test, and we're going to have to be on our game.
Well, it should be a ripping game on Sunday evening, 7 o'clock start. Unusual time for an A-League match, but hopefully the crowd will turn up, mate, and turn up in numbers, and we'll see that vast Redenbach block turn up, and a bunch of Newcastle fans travel down the highway from up north, mate. So good luck on Sunday, Andrew. Thanks again for joining us on Box to Box. We'll talk to you, no doubt, again throughout the season.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Next up, Dean Hennessy with all the A-League and FFA Cup news.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, streaming on the NTS app, on digital radio, and of course all of our podcasts on box2boxnts.com.au. Now, our former Notts County man, 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League and Hume City coach, Dean Hennessy, is not in the studio this week. He's up at a Masters tournament in Queensland, in Mooloolaba. Dino, how are you enjoying yourself up there, brother?
I'm good, Rob. Yes, it's always an exciting time this time of year. This is the little trip away where... to be fair, it's a bit of a zoo in our team. We're very blessed to play with and obviously good friends. I mean, that's most probably more important than the football itself, is that we spend, there's 25 of us spend 3 or 4 days together each and every year, and everybody puts it on the calendar. They all look forward to it. And I suppose that's what football brings to people's lives, you know. It's all the relationships that go back a long, long way.
Dino, and as we get old, I have it on very good authority that the pressure on your skills becomes even more intense, because if you pass the ball to one of your mates and have to make them run at the age of 50, they get very unhappy.
They do. There's a golden rule. As long as we hit feet, we're fine. We're most probably as good as anything going around at this age. But you're quite right, Edge. If we go half a yard either side, it's carnage, to be fair. So, to be fair, there's some really good footballers even
Well,
now.
Speaking of those, before we get into, because we're going to jump into the FFA Cup, just rattle off a few of the names that are playing up there, man.
There's Brucey McLaren, used to play for South Melbourne in the A-League. Craig Mason, stalwart, and one of the most famous boys that played most probably at Marconi. There's Sean Lane, who played in the National League. Steve Smith, the same, both at Preston, Juventus. Our coaches, like Brian Brown, comes up, who's Bonnie Riggs' coach, but also does some coaching now. And the list goes on and on and on. There's a lot of the lads like who I played with in the NPL days, or VPL as we used to know it. So, pretty good collection of not only good footballers, but most more important good people, you know.
Well, it was a big week in the FFA Cup with the first of the semi-finals. Canberra Olympic 0, Sydney FC 3, a scoreline that we really would have anticipated. What was your take on Canberra Olympic? And because I was a little surprised that they beat Green Gully and got through to the semi-final, but what was your take on their performance against Sydney FC?
Yeah, I most probably was as well. Look, to get to the final four of the FFA Cup, like I suppose we did last year and Bentley the year before, it's a new face on the map, and the fact that Canberra Olympic playing in their league and how their league works, it's, to be fair, it's most probably the biggest achievement outside the A-League teams in this competition so far. So great credit to here, to Olympic themselves to get that far. Yeah, I was surprised a little bit about the Gully result, but that was football, and it was a fabulous crowd, you know, just 5,500 against a really, really well-oiled Sydney FC. They're in fine form. They've started the A-League in fine fashion. And I'm not going to bring this up too early in this segment, boys, but did somebody predict that maybe Sydney FC might be going well this year?
Isn't that called the early crow edge? how many rounds have we played in the competition
only
so far?
Two,
he's obviously forgotten.
I'll tell you what, we're off to a good start.
He's obviously forgotten about my prediction too, because I actually said that Sydney FC would do very well too, Dean.
Okay, well, while you guys are patting yourself on the back, I might as well mention that I predicted a certain Melbourne City would go all right, just quietly. So,
you did actually, Rob, to be fair, and they are in fine nick. I mean that's most probably the game we're going to now focus on for next week, is we've got another derby in town. And I mean, I was there last week, and that's most probably one of the best performances I've seen from an A-League team since the competition started.
They made victory look second rate, didn't they?
They did. I mean, we had Kev on the show last week, and, you know, he was quite buoyant about, you know, what they might be able to do against City. But to be fair, it was one-way traffic from...
It could have easily been a 6-0 result, couldn't it? I mean, that Marco Rojas goal was, you know, just a moment of individual brilliance from a player who really, you know, in other circumstances wouldn't have been on the park because he didn't have his game legs on for most of that game. And, you know, he just showed what a quality player he is by pulling that one back. But you know, after, you know, that... Timmy goal, and 5 minutes later, Fornaroli. I mean, that's Argentine brilliant Brazilian connection in that side. It all just seemed to fuse together, and you know, it was just beautiful to watch.
Well, to be fair to Melbourne City, it wasn't just, you know, the Cahill goal or the Fornaroli goal. It was the complete performance.
Every
everybody contributed, even when they were making their substitutions. And then
Bruce Kamau was the best for me.
Wow, he was unbelievable. I mean, he's a great footballer. I mean, how he got for the, I think it was the third goal where he's barged Barrow off the ball. I mean, there's not much on him either. And you're just thinking, you've got to defend better in those situations. But I think from Kevin's point of view, he's got a lot to look at when you're thinking at the big picture. They looked a mile off where City were at this stage. And I know it's only early doors, but... And I see very, very much that they've gone straight into the market as well, and they're saying it's nothing to do with the result, but the boy Maximilian Beast has joined them. And if you see his highlight reel, he strikes them from anywhere. So if he can replicate that, that can get victory back into the loop. But at the moment, I can't see really, unless City fall over, which... I think there's too much quality there. The brand of football they play is one of the best, as I say, that I think I've seen in the A-League.
We'll just keep watching out. Colozzo, Brandan. I mean, they're just amazing, aren't they, those guys? They're blokes that have, you know, 100-game pedigree with Boca Juniors. So that's got to tell you something about his ability to play.
Well, they do. And I think, you know, we touched on Rojas coming back. I mean, he just flown in, to be fair to him, you know, from being in America and, you know, with the New Zealand squad. So, look, it was hard for him, but he is class and, you know, he'll be better for this week's game. But, again, I think there's a marker already being put down. I think Sydney's off to a really good start, as are Melbourne City. And I think, you know, I know we made some predictions before a ball was kicked, but, you know, on the surface of it after two rounds, and I know you can't get too excited after two rounds, there's a little bit of a trend going on here where both sides, I mean, to be fair, Sydney have now scored, I think, you know, just it seems like it's three or four goals every time they show up. And I saw them in pre-season up in the Gold Coast, and they look good, they're well organised, and they look a different Sydney to what they were last year, where Melbourne City, where they huffed and puffed all year last year and very close, they look like now, you know, and I think Grattan coming in has been, and we predicted that on our show, as you know, as we all know. With, but I think the Box to Box were the first to think about that Aaron Moy move, overseas, and Bratton coming back, and it's obviously worked. In fact, as you're like this, I bumped into Gary Bratton, who obviously you love, being a Heidelberg ex-player, and I told him about the story. He goes, Dean, he said, I didn't even see that one coming, but obviously we did, so well
good
done
prediction.
To all the boys in Box to Box.
No, well done to you, just squarely, because you're the one that outlined it, mate. So good forecast on that one. This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Mike Ledgley, and our man Dean Hennessy is up at his Masters tournament. He's out of the studio. He's up and about. He's just like a young spring chicken playing football again as an 18-year-old. Now, Dino, this weekend, the opening match kicks off in a little over an hour. Melbourne City v Perth Glory at Amy Park. Hopefully there'll be a decent crowd there. In a Perth have, you know, had a stop start to the season, but, you know, they're in a good position. They'll come over here expecting a result, and they're, as we know, because they have to travel a lot, they're generally a pretty good travelling side.
Yeah, look, they are, and as we said, they've got off to a reasonable start themselves. It's second v fourth, but to be honest, unless City don't show up and they continue what they've started already this season, I can't see anything but a City win. It's again another game at Amy. The goal from Tim Cahill, the thing I loved about that goal was not just the fact it was a worldie, but what it's done for Australian football. And I was talking to some friends who were up here on this trip, and they were saying, like, it's been beamed back to all the way through Europe and obviously in England, and they're talking about, they weren't just talking about the gold, they were talking about the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there was 40,000+ there, and the week before in Sydney there were 60, and it's just put a marker down in Australian football that A-League's now, because it's they lost all their content, you know, with the Sky deal.
Yeah.
A lot of the football they see now is Australian football. So, again, if we can continue this product, it makes our league look a bit more serious than maybe sometimes we take it for, you know, compared to all the European leagues. So I think that's a shot in the arm where you've got a Timmy Cahill of the world coming back, scoring a worldie, and then it's beamed all across Europe.
During the week, I had a chance to sit down with Scott Munn at Melbourne City, their CEO, and have a good yak to him. He was talking about the impact of Tim Cahill off the field and just the commitment that he shows to the younger players.
Yeah.
And I was reflecting on when I thought the power of the City Group and their resources would come to bear in the A-League, and I think we're just starting to see the beginning of that now. They are highly organised. Apart from the boy from Boca Juniors, which they only signed recently, most of their players are signed over 8 months ago. They've been able to settle into a very long pre-season and get the job done. If you compare that to their cross-town rivals, Melbourne Victory, who were still in the market as late as this week. Rojas was only signed recently. So, look, I think that's the type of activity that Melbourne City are bringing to the A-League, is that organisational power, and we're starting to see that. And I think Perth is going to walk into a hornet's nest this week, no doubt about it.
No, look, there's no doubt. I mean, City have set the bar, you know, most probably on and off the field with their facility, where their training ground, where they do all of their work. I mean, both clubs play at Amy. But you could see, really, last Saturday night, and again, looking forward, I think Kev's got a big job on his hands to be the biggest team in Melbourne, because I think Melbourne City, for the first time in their franchise from heart to city, are really serious contenders now. I mean, I think they put a marker down last year with Fornaroli, and again, he's absolutely top draw. But I think the Tim Cahill factor, mm-hmm. what he does with the youngsters, how he leads the dressing room, even though he's not the captain, that's why Tim Cahill's Tim Cahill. You know, that's why he's still playing at his age and mm-hmm. still producing the results. He's a great professional that any young man should be looking at and going, well, that's the benchmark. That's what I need to be if I'm going to be successful.
Absolutely, Dean. Now, listen, mate, we spent a lot of time talking FFA Cup and on that very Melbourne City story. So we'll talk more about all the other games next week. The Central Coast Mariners, Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne Victory, Wellington, Sydney, and, of course, Western Sydney Wanderers, Newcastle. Wrap it up. Dino, you enjoy your week, mate. And as we said earlier, stay healthy, stay safe, have fun. And, mate, we're going to hear all the war stories. We might even get a few juicy ones on air when you come back, mate.
No problem. All right, guys, have a good show.
Thanks, mate. After the break, assistant coach at Sydney FC, Steve Corica, goes through his club's start to the season in a lot more detail next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, of course. Steve Corica played over 500 senior games in a decorated international career, including 32 caps with the national side. But these days, he plies his trade alongside Graham Arnold at Sydney FC. And off the back of a disappointing season, they've just blasted out of the blocks. To find out how they've got their groove back, we welcome Steve to the show. Good to have you on the show, Steve.
How are you guys? All right?
Yeah, real good, mate. So, look, off the top, it's just been a brilliant start. All of the frustrations of last year have been dealt with on the park, the only place for them to be dealt with. But you've gone down to Canberra this week, you're over to Wellington. Winning makes it a lot more comfortable to travel.
Yeah, of course. You know, we've had a very good start to the season. First two games, 4-0 in the A-League, and then the trip to Canberra in the semi-finals on Wednesday night, so that was 3-0 as well down there. So we're very confident at the moment. The boys are playing really well and scoring goals, and And this week's a very tough one because we've had the game in Canberra, and then we're flying to Wellington on Saturday, play the game on Sunday. So a bit of travelling for the boys, and early on in the season to play that many games, it's going to show the depth in squad that we have.
And we had Andrew Redmayne on earlier in the show talking about the Wanderers, sort of stop-start to the season. He did concede that it was embarrassing, as any 4-0 result is going to be. On the flip side, you couldn't have written a better script to play in such a big crowd.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I think, firstly, it was the first game of the season. It was a derby as well. So, we wanted to get off to a good start, and against the rivals, it couldn't have started better for us. 4-0 was everything we wanted. It was a massive crowd out there at ANZ Stadium as well, 62,000. What more do you want to start the season off? It was a fantastic way to start.
Steve, I just want to ask you a question a bit about the big picture. You're a player that straddled the old NSL and the A-League, and now you're working in the industry in the A-League. The FFA Cup, you've just played in a semi-final against Canberra Olympic, I think over 5,000 people in a little boutique stadium. In many ways, it must have taken you back to the days when you were running around with clubs like Marconi. But can you appreciate the significance of the grassroots supporters in the game being activated and re-energised because of the FFA Cup? And can you see a time in the future when some of these traditional clubs that have great histories, which obviously you understand intimately, might get an opportunity at the highest level again?
Well, I think the FFA Cup has been wonderful since it's come in. It's shown a lot of teams from the state leagues that have done well, and they've made it to the semi-final. Not yet to the final, but you've seen the big teams get beat. A couple of A-League teams have got beat by these teams already. So it's great. It's just like in England, the FA Cup over there. So it gives the smaller teams a chance. So, I'm from Innisfail in Queensland, North Queensland. So I come from a very small town. And, so I know what these, small places like that, even Canberra, for instance, it was only 5,000 people there, but it was a great atmosphere, and it gave them the opportunity to play against the best players and on the big stage and in front of TV audience. And, that's what they look forward to. They go to work during the day, but then, they played a game like that in the night time. So it was fantastic to have that at.
And it is a beautiful part of the world up in far north Queensland, Innisfail, having been there a couple of times myself. A real hotbed of sporting talent up there. I know Billy Slater of Melbourne Storm, a superstar.
Yeah, he's from Innisfail as well, really.
Absolutely.
Same place. It's good.
And we've got Robbie Crayham on, the chairman of the Northern Fury, later in the show to talk about the ongoing discussion and a plan he's put on the table for promotion, relegation, and critically as a part of that whole discussion, a second division. So I suspect, based on what you've just said, that you're on board with that full bottle.
Yeah, they've got to look into it. They want to expand the A-League as well. We don't want to stay at 10 teams. But that comes with time and making sure that these 10 teams are financially viable and they build from there, really. So.
Well, Sydney FC fans all over Australia, not just in Sydney, would have been delighted to see Bernie Abini back on the pitch after such a horrible injury. That must have been a real fillip for the club generally. But can you just tell us about, since he's returned to the club, how he's handled his rehab and how he's going? We obviously saw him score that goal in typical Bernie Abini fashion, but it must be great to have him back on the park.
It's great to have him back. He's a fantastic player. He was very good for us when we made the grand final 2 years ago now. So, he went away to Club Rouge and he got injured early on in his time there and, really struggled to come back from his injury. So he wanted to come home and, he's come back to us, which we love. And obviously, the medical department worked very hard on him to get him back to full fitness, and it's a tribute to him for his hard work and the medical staff. They did a wonderful job, and it has paid off now, and he's looking fit, and he come on the other day. What a fitting way to score the last goal there in Canberra, and it's a big welcome back for Bernie Abini. So hopefully now it's going to take still time to get his match fitness back, but he's back and ready to go.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Sydney FC assistant coach and a member of Australian football royalty, Steve Corica, and Edge. Steve, has been raving about one of your players all pre-season. His favourite, I think, player in all of the A-League is Bobo. Tell us a little bit more about him and what he brings to the table. A real live wire, I'm sure, off the park, mate.
Yeah, Bobo. Yeah, he's Brazilian boy, so we've got him from over there. He's, he played in Turkey for, I think, about 8 or 9 years. He's scored many goals over there. So, but now we've got him here. He's our marquee, and he's fitted in really well. He's a very nice guy, top guy. He's got his family out here now. And he's banging in the goals. So, you know, he's, you know, we've recruited well with him. There's a lot of other players we've recruited this year as well. Alex Wilkinson, Michael Zulo, both played for the national team. Young Josh Brillante as well, fitting in very well, and you know, they are all doing really well at the moment, and especially Bobo.
Well, if you kept him off the churrasqueas, the Brazilian barbecues, they do love them. But look, I mean, he's obviously a big signing for the A-League. I mean, there's been so much talk about Tim Cahill, but he has an incredible pedigree, doesn't he? I mean, he's played for big clubs.
Yes, he has. He's played for some big clubs, and he's actually played with Philippe Pelosco in Besiktas in Turkey. So, you know, they've got already a bit of an understanding about each other. They're playing both up front now as well for us, and Philippe's doing really well with Bobo up there, and they're both scoring goals, and, you know, that's going to be a key to our game as well. So, but, yeah, he's a great player. He brings people into play. He's not just a... He's not just a goal scorer, he creates goals as well. He looks to get on the ball and create stuff for other players. You know, that's a big part of our game, and, you know, he's really fitting well.
Well, you've got a trip across the ditch for Sunday's match against Wellington.
Yeah.
Just tell us about how difficult it's been to plan for this stage of your season. Obviously, the FFA Cup game during the week, I noticed a few selection changes. So obviously you're going to use the squad across both games.
Yeah, of course. There was a couple of players that didn't play in the first game. Milos Dimitrovic come in. He hadn't played at all. He's been on the bench. Bernie's just come into the squad. There was a few others as well. Seb Ryle as well. So now we freshened up a little bit in Canberra. There was two or three players that come in, and now, you know, just trying to freshen up again for Wellington. Milos Ninkovic didn't play at all. He was on the bench, but he didn't play on Wednesday night, so he's going to be fresh. Michael Zulo as well should be fresh for Wellington. It's difficult. It's just trying to get things right and, you know, to try and freshen the boys up a little bit. Three games in a week's not easy early on in the season. So, you know, we're back in training this afternoon, and we'll check out the boys and make sure they're all okay.
Yeah, you won't be underestimating Ernie Merrick's mob, because that, you know, they were the talk of a lot of discussion pre-season, you know, with the signings of Costa Barbarousis and Guy Finkler and any number of other players, and they've just had a shocking start to the season. They had the bad luck of the non-FIFA week in week one, and a lot of their players missing, and then they got beaten up by Perth over there last week, so they will be fair dinkum red hot to get a result out of this.
They will be. They'll be ready to go. You know, first week they had a lot of players out. It's very difficult from when the national teams play over there. And second week they got beat by Perth, so you know he'll really have them pumped up for this game against us. And like you said, they brought in Barbarousis, Finkler. You know, they're very good quality players, and they got Krishna up front with pace, and McGlinchey, more sort of attacking minded player, creative player. So, you know, we're going to have to be very careful this week against them and make sure we set up our defensive setup very tight, and be careful of them attacking players.
And we saw a lot of cranky Arnie last year. We're seeing a bit more of happy Arnie, no doubt. you want to see more of the happy version, don't you, Murta?
Yeah, of course. You know, he's happy at the moment. So, you know, things are going well. Last year was, you know, disappointing. So, you know, we've had a good look at it. We've brought in some good players, and, you know, so far so good this season.
Brilliant, Steve Corica. Thank you for joining us on the show. Good luck to Sydney FC as you travel over to New Zealand for that game against Wellington this week.
Thanks, guys.
Stick around next hour. Robbie Crame, chairman of the Northern Fury, to continue the expansion debate. Then Dino returns with a look at everything else that's going on in Europe.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We'll get into second edition football news shortly before we talk to Northern Fury chairman Rabia Crame about his take on the expansion relegation debate. And of course, Dino with the international wrap. But first up, second edition news, MVA, what's doing, mate?
Well, it was a battle of the Socceroos during the week in the championship with Bailey Wright and Aaron Moy going head-to-head on Wednesday as Preston North End and high-flying Huddersfield Town locked horns at the Deepdale Stadium. The Terriers were looking to rebound from their first home defeat of the season against Sheffield Wednesday and draw level at the top of the table with Newcastle United. But ultimately, it was Wright and Preston that prevailed over Moy's Town 3-1. Both players played the full 90. Now, this is interesting. Huddersfield, two losses in a row. And the sheen's starting to come off even Aaron Moy. He's now played four games in 13 days on three continents. I think that he needs a rest, the pasty pillow.
Exactly, mate. It was a bit of a shock result. I found one of the few Huddersfield Town supporters in Australia yesterday.
And we were just chatting about with Moisey going well.
Exactly, and you know, he was bragging about it, but it was on that morning, and I said, "Have you seen this morning's result, mate?" And I won't repeat what he said, but look, I guess you know, they're just the sheer volume of games you've mentioned, mate. They're always going to catch up on a team at some particular point, and they got off such a flyer that you'd think that, you know, if they're good enough, that buffer that they created still gets them into that playoff scenario.
And look, it's interesting with Moy because, yes, we know he's played in Scotland before, so he sort of understands the rough and tumble of British/European football to a degree, but, you know, it has been massive. And look, he wasn't fantastic in those two Socceroos games, and again, he's been fantastic leading into that. So, look, a little bit of wear and tear, and yes, again, he's been over there before, but having played back in the A-League for the last couple of years, the weather's not great in the A-League. It gets nice and hot and sticky, but you only play 27 games plus your cup games, so it's nowhere near as grueling. So maybe it's getting to him, but let's hope he can get through. And
no comment from Edge on this, mate. He stepped out of the studio for a couple of minutes. So
quiet, Edge.
That's good. We'll leave him to talk at the end.
Now, Melbourne Victory says the signing of German attacking midfielder Maximilian Beister is not a knee-jerk reaction to its weekend derby capitulation. We have been in contact with Maximilian for some time, and we're thrilled to officially welcome him to the club, Kevin Muscat said during the week via Matt Windley in the News Corp media. We're constantly looking for ways to improve our squad, and we have been actively searching for a player who can add depth to our midfield and the attacking third, and more importantly, someone who can play the number 10, because Fahid Ben Kalfala, he was not great. And he wasn't alone, mind you, on the weekend.
Do you subscribe to the theory that he's just not up for the defensive work, mate?
Yes, I think so. And look, I think there's something mentally not quite right with Fahid, and that goes back to last season as well.
It does, doesn't
it? Just, you know, when the going gets tough, Ben Kalfala doesn't get going. Well, he does get going. Which way do we look at that one?
Yeah, I think he doesn't get going. But
Oli Bozanic had completed eight passes in the game before he was subbed off, which is nowhere near enough, obviously.
And James Troisi is still a couple of weeks away.
Yeah, he is. So a little bit more pain maybe for Melbourne Victory. Of course, they do play FFA Cup semi-final coming up next week against City again, Tuesday night at Amy Park, which I want to talk about this. Ticket sales are pretty slow for this. I don't understand the psyche of the fans. And you're a family man, Rob, so you might tell me. And I've only got a little tucker that it's too little to take out to the football at this stage. So maybe once he's older, I'll understand this concept of people bitching and moaning about midweek games. But it's a FFA Cup semi-final. It's the derby. Come on.
Yeah, I think that that family issue probably takes 10 to 15% of the crowd off the top of the game. So, you know, you've got an inner city venue and people coming from all over the city to come. So I think that's fair enough that some parents, you know, just want to get the kids to bed, you know, particularly those ones around the sort of the 10 to, you know, 12-year-old, maybe a little under, you know, bedtime 8:30, 9 o'clock-ish, and that's the end of it. Maybe they can stay home and watch it on the TV. But the thing, like you, I don't see a lot of 10 to 13-year-olds sitting at behind the goals at either end during the derby. You know, so what are these guys doing? Are they going to turn up in the numbers that they turn up in? There should be at least 20,000 at that game.
Well, I would hope. Yeah, mid-20s. I mean, end of the day, you've got a club with the Melbourne Victory with 23,000, 24,000 members. You've got City have now clicked over 11,000. They've sold 1,000 on the back of that to Big Win last week, I believe. So That's 34,000 members between these two clubs playing in a 30,000 seat venue in a derby in a semi final. I'll say it again.
Now we talked about this
get
before,
there,
but are the members getting the FFA Cup in their membership this year?
They do get a discount and a priority window to buy tickets.
So that's probably something that they need to do. Maybe the FFA Cup, as good as it has been on the pitch.
Yeah, it's difficult though because you don't know how many games you're going to play. Like you might only play one game and get knocked out.
Yeah, good point. I guess what I'm thinking is, maybe just a standard, you know, most people are prepared to either do a bank transfer or, an automatic credit card payment that you just might click a box and it automatically comes off, so you don't have to do anything about it. I guess it's getting a little too complicated for some, but the bottom line is if they want to go, they'll go.
Absolutely. Now, Manchester United manager Jose Mourinho, you might have heard of him, has congratulated Jurgen Klopp on masterminding a fantastic defensive performance from Liverpool following the side's goalless Premier League encounter back earlier in the week. Mourinho has been the target of criticism for his negative tactics in the match. United recorded only 35% possession while registering one shot on target and one corner in the clash, but has since praised his Liverpool counterpart for the Reds' safety first in the dull draw. We didn't get the result we wanted, Mourinho said. We wanted to win and just got a point, so we were not 100% successful. And there was also some little smart aleck comments from him during the week talking about Liverpool being the one of the wonders of the world. He's getting a bit upset that the bloke down the road, Mr. Klopp, is getting all the glory, and Jose is just copping it at the moment. But
you're only as good as your last performance, Jose. Your last performances haven't been sort of lighting it up, big fella. But I think he would have taken just as much satisfaction out of the Champions League results of the week, which he was not involved with, wouldn't he?
Yes, he would have. And I'm not even sure I got that in the notes, but let's freelance. Pep Guardiola, talking about former great managers with the luster coming off, 4-0 against Barca. It was the great man Lionel Messi registering a hat-trick for the 50 millionth time in his career.
Yeah, you just think that, if Guardiola cannot construct a game plan with his pedigree and knowledge of these players, then when this team is on fire, nobody can.
Absolutely, but he couldn't. And the thing is, Barcelona and Messi didn't actually play particularly well. So that's the scary bit. Anyway, now, as we heard right here on Box to Box weeks ago, a consortium is in place that is prepared to bankroll a second A-League team in Brisbane, according to Miriam Blyberg, reports AAP's Vince Rigari, the former coach of the Brisbane Roar and the now-defunct Gold Coast United, says he is part of a group that is serious about backing another franchise in southeast Queensland. Now, again, this is not exactly news to us because we had him on the show 3 or 4 weeks back talking about this very thing, but it's interesting with all the machinations, including talking to Robbie later on the show up there in North Queensland.
Yep.
I tell you what, there's a lot of smoke out there. There's got to be some fire now on expansion in the A-League.
There has to be. I mean, the conversation is at that tipping point now where everybody knows it needs to happen from a financial business model. We all know it needs to happen to get the kind of money that that the FFA needs to recoup from the free-to-air and the pay-TV platform. So, yeah, there's got to be some kind of announcement coming up pretty soon, doesn't there?
You would have thought so. And Greg O'Rourke, head of A-League, which we spoke to on the show again recently, is really put this on the agenda. And it's a little bit arse backwards, dare I say, the way the A-League's gone about it, or the FFA's gone about it, but I don't care. As long as we get teams 11 and 12 and then further down the track 13 and 14 in this competition.
I think it's fair to say that it wasn't on the agenda for this season.
No, it wasn't.
But it's been forced onto the agenda by everyone from, FIFA and the AFC through to the clubs and every other stakeholder. And the only stakeholder that really didn't have it on the agenda as a firm discussion point for this coming season was the FFA.
It's so funny because they've gone into this broadcast rights negotiation, and my belief is firmly that they've gone in just expecting this big increase and almost looking to double their money, even though the Socceroos are no longer part of the deal.
Yeah.
And I think those negotiations, they've gone out of their exclusive period of Fox. They're now out in the big bad world talking to the free-to-airs and other players, presumably like the Optuses and maybe even the ESPNs.
Well, one of the free-to-airs has counted out pretty much already because 10 have got the big bash. And that, all the glitters is not necessarily gold because, you look at their share price yesterday, it tanked in the face of Netflix and other competitors, regardless of some of the positive news stories the Channel 10's coming out with. So, that's an example of the sheer business fact that demands that unless you can bring a top rating product to the table, the money just isn't automatically there. And unfortunately, the A-League has not yet won over the general sports fan. I mean, those of us in this room and football fans alike are on board, but the general sports fan, they're not on board yet.
No, they're not, and that goes back to the campaign for the A-League. You've got to have a team because something like half or less than half of the kids that play football, and that's one of the great badges that football has, is that's got massive participation, but the kids don't necessarily have a Melbourne Victory or an Adelaide United on their agenda. So they've got to change that, and I think the final point on this with the broadcast is, they've gone to the market. They haven't really heard what they like, and they've worked out, geez, maybe we need to have a bit more, a few more teams, maybe a few extra markets in this whole process.
Yeah, and I think that discussion we mentioned last week, that the free-to-wears need two games, the pay TV need four exclusive games, and that's the model that you need. So we need two more teams, don't we?
We do. We need more. We need 16, according to Ange Postecoglou during the week too. So anyway,
open about it, and so he's, I know when Ange doesn't toe the company line at times, they're not afraid to tap him on the shoulder about that. So clearly, nobody is pulling him up on that, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And look, this broadcast stuff is something we probably should tackle next week. Try and get another industry expert, because it's all gone a little
Someone
bit
like
too
John
quiet.
Stentz,
for my
he's he's usually got his finger on the pulse on those sorts of things.
On the AFR, absolutely.
Now, mate, before we go, I wanted to talk to you about a subject that's very close to the hearts of everyone at Box to Box, and that is the Storage King campaign throughout the month of October. So if you're moving home or you're moving your office, there's still time this month. It's about a week and a half to go. So make your move for a cause that matters with Storage King, because throughout the month of October so far and right up until the end of the month, $1 from the purchase of every teacher's box at Storage King is going to be donated to the McGrath Foundation to help fulfil Jane McGrath's vision of providing access to a breast care nurse for every family experiencing breast cancer, no matter where they live or their financial situation. And that's a massive thing, because when families go through difficult times like this, it often takes an income out of the home and puts additional stresses on the family. So when you've got someone who's a breast care nurse who's got expertise not only about the illness itself, but also about all of the hospital aspects, the administration aspects of just dealing with an issue like this, it just makes a massive, massive difference, mate. So you want to call 1-800-STORAGE today for your nearest store. Go to storageking.com.au and support the vital work of the McGrath Foundation with Storage King. Mate, I know you're on board with that.
Yes, and I actually, without a word of a lie, I'm actually in the market at the moment for some storage solutions. So again, I said a couple of weeks ago, I just need a little bit of a box to box discount.
There sure is, mate, and I've already spoken to somebody about that, mate. So get on board with Storage King and support this great cause. We've all been touched by breast cancer in some fashion or another, and you can do something about it by buying a TCS box at Storage King, and by extension, you've made a donation to the cause. Well done, Marco. After the break, we've got Robbie Crayham, and we're going to talk with him. He's been in the news this week about promotion, relegation, and he's well versed in this subject because he's the chairman of the Northern Fury. That's all coming up next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, and of course, all of our podcasts are on the Box to Box NTS.com.au website. So go there and have a listen. Now, the conversation around football, apart from what's been going on the park, has been promotion, relegation, second division. And a man with a lot of skin in the game in this conversation is Robbie Crayham, the chairman of the Northern Fury. Robbie, welcome to Box to Box.
Good evening. Thank you very much for having me on.
No, not at all, mate. And we know that you're an outspoken voice on this subject, and you command a vast area of passionate football people. So just give us your take on the urgency of the second tier of football in Australia and how you see that coming up, and then we might talk a bit more about promotion and relegation in a moment.
Sure. Look, I think there's no doubt that the discussions about having a second-tier competition has been on the table for so many years. I think the introduction of the NPL has been a great initiative throughout the whole country, and I think it's worked in Queensland, and I'm sure it's worked in the other states. I think what we've got to level is now we've got an NPL competition, but we've only got 10 teams in the A-League, which has proved there's just not enough teams in the A-League. So for the expansion, everyone talks about the expansion of the game and where it needs to go, and obviously the FFA have come out and said, we want to fish where there's a lot of fish. And, the thing about, the expansion of the game, it has been tried before and it failed previously. Not because I don't believe that the passion was there. I think the whole process of the expansion was flawed in a sense, we tried to manufacture teams rather than build from grassroots up. And I think what the NPL system has allowed is grassroots up. And I think any expansion needs to go from grassroots up. And I think the intention, whether even like from us, from the Fury perspective, you know, we have to earn the right to go into the A-League. We shouldn't just be giving it to it. And part of that is by building a platform where you've got a development pathway right through both in males and females, right through from the under 12, all the way through the youth system, into the NPL, into a second tier system, then right into the A-League. And I think that shows that the game's expanding. The more teams that are playing, the more opportunities for kids. At the moment, it's a lack of opportunities for kids to go to the highest level. And that's what's lacking in the game at the moment.
Rabbi, I mean, one of the great things about this A-League's off-season has been there's been a lot of discussion about promotion and relegation. You've written a very good piece, which is on the Football Today website, but also Peter Philopoulos has shared some personal views, the CEO of Perth Glory, about a second tier and establishing the foundations for promotion and relegation, whether that's, you know, 5, 10, 15 or 20 years down the track. I think this is probably one of those times in the game where a lot of stakeholders have had an opportunity to voice their opinions about promotion, relegation, second tier, you know, the foundations of the game moving forward. I think there's one issue that's sort of bubbled to the surface, which I think will be hard to resolve, and that is the existing A-League owners effectively expecting to be inoculized from any relegation. And I know in your piece you talk about let's start with promotion and bringing relegation way down the track. But I think the fans are expecting that at some point there would be a promotion and relegation between the grassroots and those community clubs that build a footprint that's big enough to sustain them in the A-League and the traditional A-League, you know, the manufactured brand. So what is your view of that conflict between desire of the grassroots to have promotion and relegation and the A-League owners saying, no, we want to be protected, we want our investment protected?
I think we've got to have a balance. I think there's no doubt the A-League clubs have a right to demand, you know, a bit more security. And I think by promoting initially, they've got that security of tenure. At the same time, as the promotion relegation happens, their license is going to be worth a lot more money. You know, and we're not saying, you know, that start the promotion relegation straight away. I think what I've suggested is start the promotion process. Now, that promotion process could be done over 5-10 years, as long as it's shown as the promotion process and the relegation process coming. I think the key thing that's missing is that what is the criteria to be in the A-League? Even on a promotion relegation stage, I think what I've put up forward is that, you know, the teams that win the second tier competition, you know, come one and two, be offered a position, or maybe just the one. But they've got to meet a criteria to go into the A-League. Now, not every team that will play in a second tier has aspirations to be in the A-League, right? So, and they've got to hit a criteria. If you don't meet the criteria, you don't get there. It doesn't matter whether you win it or don't win it. I think what is lacking at the moment, a clear criteria, what is it going to take to be in the A-League? So if you're a second-tier team, what do I need to do to make sure that if and when I win that competition, I can put myself in position to be in the A-League? The more teams that play, the license become more, there's more money into the game. By more games, more content, more money. From the A-League club's perspective, their licences are going to be worth a lot more by having a successful second-tier competition and a greater sense of urgency. You know, and also, I think part of that system process has got to be, if a team is relegated from the A-League and goes back down the next division down, well, there's got to be some sort of financial compensation, like they do overseas, in relation to, you know, to make sure from their commitment perspective. But, you know, the success of football, you know, from my perspective, has always been the desire, you know, at the end of the year, who goes up and who goes down. What we have to do, we can't implement it straight away, but what we can do is build a platform that it could happen in 5 years or it could happen in 10 years, a slowly approach. But I think what is lacking at the moment, what is the plan for it? So one would hope that by the end of this A-League season, there is a very clear plan of what promotion relegation is going to look like for Australia football over the next 10 years.
Absolutely.
And that's all we're looking for. I think that's the key. I think people are saying, everyone expects it to be, let's have it next year or the year after. No. Like, this is about laying the foundation of giving the sport of football that's something no other code has. Rugby league doesn't have it. AFL doesn't have it. Rugby union doesn't have it. The beauty about football, it can have it.
Of course. And that's the international model around the world, isn't it, Robbie? But this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley, and we're talking to Robbie Crame, the chairman of the Northern Fury. Now, to summarise your plan, which is, you know, very detailed, as Edge pointed out, it's on various websites, sporting websites. So the summary is, let's establish a second division of 20 teams, promote two teams from the second division to A-League at the end of year one, and one team thereafter for another 4 years to take the A-League to 16 teams. Okay, so we're promoting teams out of the second division to create those extra games in the A-League. So it makes sense from here. Then let's replace the promoted team from the second division at the end of year three to maintain it at 16 teams. Then introduce promotion and relegation from year six. And let's use the existing NPL competition as a third division with two grand finalists promoted to the second division from the end of year six. It seems like a well-considered plan, and it's being, you know, fairly well received around the football community. So is that the sort of vibe you're getting from the CEOs, the owners, the chief executives in the A-League and NPL that you're talking to?
Absolutely. I mean, since that went up, I've had a number of phone calls from a wide range of people. You know, people have got different views, but the concept's all there. And I think the biggest thing that we've discussed over is that it's not whether it's a length of time be in 5 years or 10 years. If the concept is right, you can build a model around it.
Yes.
And then how do we create football teams in the A-League rather than try and make them up? There are a lot of clubs already existent that are playing in the current NPL system nationally that deserve a right to go for the A-League if they know what the criteria is. And we don't need to manufacture teams. We have a lot of history, a lot of culture in the game, and that's what we need to create.
Yeah, and you look at that campaign that's going on for from the FFA headquarters around Choose Your Team. Well, there's a lot of people, you know, in the NPL and various other lower divisions. They don't have to choose a team. They've already got a team. It's a matter of just putting that team into the system to give them the opportunity to grow through the ranks, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you should look overseas. There are a lot of people overseas that support teams in the first division or second division, and they might have a second team in the Premier League in Europe. But, you know, I think the beauty about football, everyone has an ownership to their club, whether it be at the NPL level or their local club. We all know club. I think the campaign of FFA is fantastic, choose a team, but we need more teams to choose from. We don't need to create any more teams. Those teams already exist. As long as they know what the criteria is to go to the next level and put a plan in place, I think this is, we're at a tipping point for football in this country. And, you know, we've seen what the first couple of games, first couple of weeks of the A-League has produced. And I think there's a great opportunity for a plan driven by the FFA, what it's going to look like by the end of this year, and set the pathway. I mean, we've been talking about vision, we've been talking about the way forward and everything else. It's all fantastic, but there's been no clear paperwork in relation to what promotion and relegation is going to be. We talk about expansion, and we're going to create this. Is there going to be another team in Brisbane, another team in Sydney? Well, you know what? Let's create a marketable plan. How are we going to get to 16 teams in the A-League over a period of time? How are we going to have a sustainable second-tier competition? How do we get people to take ownership of clubs and build a sustainable model? What is the criteria? And if you meet it, you should be given that opportunity. If you can't meet it, well, you know you're not going to go there. So, and people might not have aspirations to be in the A-League. They might be quite happy to stay in the NPL or the second-tier competition. And that's fantastic, because we need those clubs to be involved.
Robbie, we had Greg O'Rourke on the program a few weeks ago, and we pushed him fairly hard on questioning down this line. And he gave us the impression that two teams are likely to enter the competition next year, that he said it would be an application process, and that they had a number of consortiums and various people on the radar. But he also gave us the impression that don't expect promotion and relegation anytime soon, or a second tier. So have you had any discussions with the FFA? Are they talking to you? And what can you tell us about that?
Look, I haven't. I mean, in the recent times, I haven't. Previously, in the past couple of years, I have had that discussion at the FFA level. I think that, you know, when you talk about expansion in the A-League, you have to talk about promotion and relegation. You have to talk about what is the future. You know, to say that we're going to have two more teams in the A-League next year, well, that's great. But if you're going to manufacture teams, you know, unless you've got deep pockets and you've got a lot of money to sustain it, you know, owners are going to, get frustrated with it. I think that expand the A-League, no question about it, but have a marketable plan for 10 years. Tell people what it's going to look like, how we're going to do it, and don't lead them down a path that there is no return from.
Hey, Robbie, it's your plan just looks like the template, and you know, people should accept a good plan when it comes along and start to work from there. If it's been well accepted by others in the game, then this seems to be the discussion point. Mate, thank you so much for being on the show, Robbie. We'll wish you success with the ongoing discussions around this subject, and I'm sure you'll be at the centre of it.
Thank you very much, guys.
Good to talk to you, Robbie. Next, Dino with his European wrap.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. On digital radio, streaming on the NTS app, or you can catch up with any of our podcasts. If you missed any of this show today, you can jump onto boxtoboxnts.com.au, listen to anything you missed, or any of the other episodes for that matter that have been broadcast in the past 12 months. Now, there's been plenty, as always, going on in Europe. Champions League, we've got a massive round of Premier League coming up. Dean Hennessy back on the line from Queensland. Dino, what is happening in your world of, in terms of the Europe? European football, massive Champions League, Premier League coming up.
Yeah, look, it's most probably starting to set it in stone, like with the Champions League. It's halfway through their qualifying rounds, you know, all the way through Group A through to Group H. And there's a little bit of a trend happening already. You know, we can see certain teams that are dominating their divisions. And then there's some other groups that are really, really tight and, you know, can go either way. So halfway through that stage, and it's most probably the next game, the fourth game, that might define some of the moments for some of the clubs that, you know, want to push on into the last 16.
Dino, we love talking about Europe, and how can we not love talking about there was no Pep with Pep? 4-0 they copped. They copped 4 at Barcelona. What was your view of all of that? Because that was obviously a huge game for Manchester City and English football, and they did not turn up.
Look, it's firstly they're away from home, so that's always a tough place to go.
I'm making excuses for them, Dino.
No excuses. You know me, I'm always pretty straightforward. But I think Pep's obviously done an unbelievable job in the first, you know, few months in the Premier League, and you know they're setting the bar at the moment in the Premier League. But I think when you come to that European area where it's year in, year out, you know, your Real Madrids, your Barcelonas and some of these top clubs in the world are very battle-hardened in that Champions League, where if you look at City's background, and, you know, with all due respect to Pep, he's took over from other people that've been in the Champions League and not really ever done really that well. So I didn't expect it to be an overnight success. I still think Manchester City will qualify and go through their group, but I think from a European point of view, it's going to take a little bit more time, more so than maybe the domestic league, that I think he's got it right in the league. Week in, week out, they're playing some of the best football that they've played for a long time. But I think Champions League is a different league, so to speak. And, you know, you're talking about some really, really big clubs that have been there year in, year out. And there's not a massive turnover in their playing staff, so they know how to deal with a Manchester City coming away. And it was no surprise. Maybe the result was, but in the sense of 4, but not the fact they got beat. I still think there's a long way to go for Manchester City.
Well, it's funny you say that, because they actually, looking ahead in the fixtures for their group, they actually are now in a tussle because of the table. They're only 1 point ahead of Borussia Mönchengladbach, and they actually, in the second group of games, they have to play Mönchengladbach back away from home. So it's probably going to come down to that game, and that'll be a big, big fixture for Manchester City in their Champions League. But the other England team, Arsenal, they put 6 away, and Alexis Sanchez with a chip of the goalkeeper was something special to see.
Yeah, it was, and Mesut Ozil as well. I mean, he's been in great form in the Premier League, and again, he's come up trumps again in the Champions League, to be fair to the lads. So, I mean, Arsenal are, along with Paris Saint-Germain, are dominating the Group A. You know, both on 7 points, and if you look at, you know, the Basel and Ludo Rajic, it's not looking too good for them. They're 6 points behind with 3 games to play. It's going to be very, very difficult for that for Group A, at least for both Arsenal and Paris Saint Germain to qualify.
And Claudio Ranieri's got Leicester motoring along just nicely, because you know that Copenhagen side, has been going okay. You know, a win and a draw in the opening 2 weeks, and then Spurs, you know, they got a result against Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, look, I mean, from a Leicester point of view, it's funny, like, they're trying to settle back into the Premier League. There was a lot of expectation, having won the league last year, to then back it up, and we all know how tough that is. All of the major teams and the big boys of the league have all reinforced and, you know, really got their stocks up, where they've got a really deep squad, where, to be fair to Leicester, they're pretty much the same, bar one or two new faces, and it's really refreshing, I think, from Leicester's point of view, the fact that they've took the 9 points, and it's really most probably only one win away, and then they're through to the last 16, which will be an unbelievable achievement. And if somebody told me that 12 months ago that Leicester will win the league and they'll be in Champions League and they'll be just one game away from the last 16, you'd have all gone, how much money do we want to put on that one?
It wouldn't have been 5,000 to one, would it, mate?
It wouldn't.
You know, and so, still, as long as they can just get that Premier League season, you know, on track, they're sitting sort of mid-table there. They don't want to lose too many more games in the next half a dozen or so, because that will cause some worrying moments. But as long as they can keep that season on track and just get it together and maintain the position in the top flight, that's probably, you know, the most important thing right now.
It's quite funny, though, when you look at it. In the league, where last year they were very, very defensive-minded, in the sense that they didn't really give too much away. They had that Vardy X factor, where every time they went forward, they always looked dangerous. He's most probably struggling to just get a goal or two that might just turn their season. He's still a good player. You know, that's why Arsenal went in for him big in the off-season. But the fact that it comes down to now, like, they're actually playing in the Champions League like they were playing in the league last year. And, you know, 1-0 wins and really, really tough at the back and defensively. Look, I think it's refreshing. I mean, if they throw it away from here, then I don't think they'll ever forgive themselves. But I've got no doubt that they'll continue on in the Champions League, qualify for the 16. And I think their form in the Premier League, when we get to that part, will continue to build and grow. I mean, it's you've just got to, like, hang in for periods of time. I mean, the season's a long, long season, and everybody has some, you know, little drawbacks and slow starts. And we've all seen, you know, even going back to Leicester, when Nigel Pearson was in there, like, they were dead and buried with about 10 games to go, yet survived, which then laid this platform for where they are now.
Absolutely. All right, mate, that's Champions League. This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Dean Hennessy, who's out of the studio this week, playing up in a Masters tournament in Queensland and enjoying it as well, getting up very, very early every single day to get out there and run around the park, warm up, keep himself fired up and fit, eating and drinking all the right things.
Well, here he's having the ice baths.
Yes, he would.
Except the ice is in his drink.
I've not even kicked the ball yet, so at the moment I'm in absolutely tip-top shape without kicking a ball. But if you want to ring me tomorrow, it might be a different case.
Absolutely. All right, Dino, so let's jump into this weekend's round of football in the Premier League. So it kicks off Bournemouth v Spurs, a home game for Bournemouth. You know, we haven't seen much of Brad Smith with the Cherries since he joined them, mate.
He did play last week.
Yeah, I know, but we haven't seen a lot of him, though. But he's you know, maybe the gaffer is seeing his efforts with the green and gold.
Yeah.
He has been brilliant.
How could you not?
Yeah.
Look, it's the early game as well, so it'll be live. And look, Bournemouth have, for me, again, they're doing well. I mean, if you think back to many, many years ago, in fact, not so long ago, it's most probably only about 3 or 4 years, then, like, they're in the fourth division, you know, or the fourth tier of English football. Now they're, you know, I wouldn't say they're a powerhouse, but, you know, they're in the 11th spot in the league table, and a win could actually push them, you know, depending on results, push them into the top six, the top eight. So it's an important game for Bournemouth. Tottenham, again, they had a result, obviously, in Champions League. And, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but did you see the Lloris save?
Yes, I did, mate. A brilliant one, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. I mean, I know we're going back to Champions League, but a save that was.
Yeah.
I saw it, and it just kept being replayed. I mean, that's an unbelievable save.
And for a bloke who's not the biggest goalkeeper in the game, some of the acrobatic efforts of that bloke defy logic.
No, that's right. So, I mean, this will be a big game for Bournemouth. I mean, if they can take a scalp here and then push on to, say, let's say, in the top 8 or 9, all of a sudden, you know, they become quite a serious side in the Premier League. Where, you know, it's most probably unfashionable. Bournemouth, you know, who are Bournemouth compared to your Liverpools and your Man United, the cities of the world. But I think it's really refreshing, and I think, you know, we talk about Eddie Howe quite a lot, about, you know, his, you know, progression and the talk that he might be the replacement once Arsene Wenger leaves Arsenal. So it's quite an interesting space, not only for him as an individual, but for the club itself. It's a small ground, it's boutique. And obviously we've got our Aussie boys there, and we're hoping that he can kick on. And he's done really well for Australia with Brad Smith, that move from Liverpool. So, you know, hopefully they can get a result and stay really close to the top teams in the country.
And the flip side, Dino, is Tottenham. They, I mean, we talk about it, you say it's a big game for Bournemouth, but Tottenham, 18 points, third spot on the ladder, only 1 point away from top spot. They've got a lot to play for. And Tottenham have not lost a game in their eight league fixtures this year. So they're doing well. 5 wins and 3 draws they've had. And so they're obviously laying a foundation for a title tilt.
Yeah, look, if you look at the league table, Edge, it's really tight, you know. Like, City obviously leading with Arsenal on 19 points, then there's Tottenham on 18. And obviously the game this week where Liverpool played Manchester United, that was an interesting game earlier in the week, where it was most... I mean, it's one of the biggest football games in British football. And to be fair, it wasn't the best on the eye. I mean, I must admit, I got up early and watched it, and I'm thinking,
yeah, so did I. It's team, two teams didn't want to lose.
Be in bed, you know.
There was two teams who didn't want to lose. That was the
That's right, and I think that's a disappointing part. I give City credit that they don't go out and play like that. They go out and play to win. They don't go and play to, we'll go and get a point here and we'll go and do this over there. They go out every week in the Premier League, from what we've seen in the first 8 games, to go and win a football match. And most probably, Arsene Wenger's in the same type of vein, where he wants to just go out and win and show people how good a side they are. And it's no surprise that they're the two top teams. But then when you start to get a bit cagey, which, look, I know you do, you're the top end of football worldwide, you know, sometimes they tighten up. And, you know, you look at Mourinho, he's most probably got a new way of approaching certain big games. I mean, to be fair, I thought Man United were the better side in lots of phases of it. And I don't know, again, if you saw the save by De Gea. I mean, what a save from Coutinho's strike.
Yeah, that was incredible. That Coutinho shot should have been buried into the back of the net, but De Gea, you know, it was just brilliant, wasn't it, mate? So, hey, mate, look, it's a massive weekend of Premier League coming up. I know there's a bunch of other games we would have loved to have sunk our teeth into.
Well, I think we'll just touch before we fly, Rob. It's definitely the Chelsea-Man United is the game of the week.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I think, depending on what happens there, it'll be interesting then how the season progresses.
Well, you'll be still up in Queensland, mate, so you won't even have to go to bed for that one. So it'll be the
1 a.m.
kick-off.
Exactly.
Fantastic. All right, hey, Dino, have a lot of fun, mate. You're going to be back in the studio next week and tell us about the glory of your salad days.
Seeing crab walk into the studio after five games of football.
Just make sure there's no injuries and we'll be all right.
Absolutely, Dino. Well, stay safe. Enjoy yourself, mate. Just have a lot of fun with your old mates, and we'll talk to you next week.
No, lovely. Thanks, guys.
No worries, mate. Next up, Mark Van Aken back in the studio with Stoppage Time.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box, the fourth official signals. There's 6 minutes left, but before we get into it, Marco, mate, I am struggling this allergy season. I've never had allergies before, hay fever, the rest of it, but I'm being jammed for the first time ever. Maybe it's because I've just
ticked the wind,
over.
Mate.
It is the wind. It's the allergy season, and
bit of a bout today. The wind too.
Oh, sure is in Melbourne. That's no doubt, but. Allergy sufferers, like I hope I'm not going to be one for the rest of my life, have no doubt felt the same sort of thing already. The runny nose, the itchy, watery eyes, sneezing, scratchy, sore throat, itchy ears, stuffiness, general annoyance of hay fever. So for fast-acting, non-drowsy relief, do what I did. From the symptoms associated with hay fever, you can choose Telfast, 180 mg extra strength. In just 1 hour, you'll find the same relief I got from sneezing, itchy eyes, blocked or runny noses, and it lasts for up to 24 hours. So get Telfast, 180 gram extra strength, 70 tabs for just $24.99. after the $5 cash back as well at Chemist Warehouse. Ask after that because that's a pretty good deal. Always read the label. Use only as directed. If symptoms persist, see your healthcare professional at Chemist Warehouse. Lowest prices are guaranteed, gentlemen.
They certainly are. Now, let's get straight into it. Celtic's Champions League hopes were in tatters on Wednesday as Borussia Mönchengladbach produced a clinical performance to inflict a 2-0 home defeat over the Scottish champions. Now, where this becomes a stoppage time story is a pub in Glasgow was showing the game, and they had the old blackboard out the front, and it was, you know, Wednesday night, Celtic versus, and they had a few cracks at writing Borussia Mönchengladbach. They gave up at the end and said, Celtic versus some German team. Oh, sorry, versus a German team. Showing they've got a bit of a sense of... Germans not known for their sense of humour, but Mönchengladbach, it's close to the Dutch border, maybe that's why. But they actually changed their Twitter handle for the next 24 hours to a German team.
good on them. That's fantastic.
Yeah, look, fantastic stuff.
Hey, what about Bangkok? Can we talk about Bangkok?
Yeah, go for it, because I'm looking for my next story, so fire away.
Well, the game that was scheduled in Bangkok, the King of Thailand died. Then there's been this doubt. There's been doubt around the game. And did you read, you know, so when these sort of situations develop, obviously some fairly sensitive discussions go between governments and federations. And you can imagine.
And the Thais, they love all over the royalty. We're not making light of that occasion, not at all. And you know, people, you know, if you look the wrong way in these circumstances, they'll let you know all about it.
But if you follow the story closely, like I do, because of the employment that I have, and that means that we've got a truckload of fans waiting to find out whether they're going to Thailand or not. Yeah. But when you actually...
Hopefully a busload, not a truckload.
Yeah, well, a truckload in a bus. Yeah. The funniest story that I saw was the fact that there was rumours and there was reports by some news agencies that the Australian fans were going to be asked to wear black and white and not cheer in the game to show
And how would that be different than most other games?
Well, zing. There's a zing.
Yeah, good one.
But I did see that news report. Imagine the representatives from the Thailand government and the Thai FA sitting down with our colleagues at the Football Federation of Australia saying, we'd like your fans to wear black and white and not cheer. Well, they probably would say, well, the not cheering thing we can talk about, but the black and white, probably not, brother.
Yeah, no.
No, no.
More likely in Singapore, you would have thought.
Yeah, you'd think so. Anyway, let's talk about this next one. FIFA wants to decide in January.
You found your story, did you?
Not really. I thought I had a funny one in here. This is all a bit dry, but look, let's have a chat about this, because I think it's a bit sad and funny at the same time. FIFA wants to decide in January if the 2026 World Cup will expand from its 32-team format, to 40 or 48 teams, the favoured options. FIFA President Gianni Infantino said on Thursday he expects a decision when the ruling council meets for the first time next year. The January session is likely to be in Zurich. The general feeling is rather positive toward its expansion, Infantino said at a briefing. What's going on? 48 teams at the World Cup.
I think now, with all of these things, Mark, I mean, you've got to embrace new ideas. You've got to give it some consideration and find out what it's all about. And the fact that it's the FIFA president, you know, which we all laugh a bit about these days, but the fact that he's pushing it means that it's going to carry some weight. So what he's talking about effectively is that there'll be a massive knockout phase in the first game. Teams will go in seeded and then there'll be like a rapid charge.
I don't mind it. I mean, if you compare it to normal leagues, everyone's got an opinion on this, and mine is that normal leagues around the world, no less than a quarter of the teams in the league make the finals. Yeah, that's a fair point in every sport. So if there are 200 plus teams around the world and a quarter of those get to play in the finals. Yeah, well, I mean, talk about countries. There's 200 or so teams in FIFA. I think about 210 or so. I know you're giggling at it, but
I'm giggling. Michael's just reclining back there.
Yeah, look, guys,
Until it gets one, you lose, Rob.
Nah, it just means more games too, so I'm happy with
you're
that.
You're more rubbish games.
Unless you travel halfway across the earth and see your team get knocked out in the first game.
No, well, you're not going to do that. But if they do, they can just travel with the Green and Gold Army and do it that way.
No refunds.
Thank you, Marco. Thank you, Edge. That's full time on Box to Box. Join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.